Hey everyone, and welcome. Get ready to dive into a topic that's, well, let's just say it's not your typical dinner table conversation. Secularism and religion in Austria.
Austria? You're kidding, right? What's so special about Austria?
I know. It might not sound like the most thrilling topic at first glance, but trust me, once you peel back the layers, it gets seriously interesting.
Okay, you've piqued my curiosity, so spill the beans. What's got you so fired up about Austria?
Well, we've been digging through a mountain of sources. Legal documents, philosophical text, even some recent statistics. And let me tell you, Austria's got this whole secularism thing going on, but it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all situation.
I'm intrigued. So what's the mission for today's deep dive? Are we going to try and unravel the mysteries of the Austrian psyche?
Basically, we're on a quest to understand how Austria defines and deals with different worldviews, especially religious ones. And get this, they've got this word, Weltanschauung, which is basically like a worldview on steroids.
Welton what now? That sounds intense.
It's a mouthful, right? But seriously, it's a key concept in all of this. And get this, it comes straight out of philosophy, like something you'd hear in a philosophy 101 class.
Okay, you've got to break this down for me because my philosophy knowledge is a bit rusty, to say the least. What is a Weltanschauung and why should we care?
So imagine this. It's like a person's own unique operating system for understanding the world. A set of beliefs and values that shape how they see everything around them.
So it's not just about religion, it can be about anything.
Exactly. While a Weltanschauung can be religious, it can also be totally secular, like humanism. It's really about the big questions, the fundamental ideas that shape a person's understanding of their place in the universe. And it's fascinating how Austria has taken this super heady philosophical concept and tried to integrate it into their legal system.
Whoa, hold on a minute. We're talking about philosophy and law now. How does that even work? It seems like those are two very different worlds.
You're telling me. It's like trying to mix oil and water. But that's what makes this whole thing so intriguing. And that's where things get a bit complicated. You see, Austrian law doesn't actually define religion directly. Instead, it uses this concept of a religious Weltanschauung to determine if something has legal standing.
Okay, so in the eyes of Austrian law, religion is essentially a specific type of worldview.
You got it. But here's the kicker. Not all worldviews are treated equally under the law. And that's where things get really interesting, especially when you start talking about secularism and the idea of a neutral public sphere.
Okay, you're going to have to elaborate on that because I have a feeling this is where the rubber meets the road, right?
Absolutely. And this is where understanding those subtle distinctions in language becomes super important. For example, Austrian law draws a line between two terms, confessionless and atheist. And they're not just interchangeable synonyms.
Wait, so someone who's confessionless isn't necessarily an atheist. I'm officially lost.
Okay, let me try to clarify. Confessionless is more like a self-description. It simply means that someone doesn't adhere to a particular organized religion. They might still be spiritual, they might believe in a higher power, but they don't identify with a specific church or religious institution.
So it's like saying, I'm not religious, but...
Exactly. But atheism is different. That's a whole worldview in itself, a belief system that explicitly rejects the existence of God or gods. And here's where it gets really wild. There's this group in Austria called the Central Council of the Confessionless. And there's actually debate about whether atheist groups should be allowed to participate.
Wait, seriously, they have a whole council for people who don't identify with a religion. That's amazing. But also kind of mind-boggling when you think about it.
I know, right? It really highlights how differently these issues are approached in Europe compared to, say, the United States, where religion and politics are often intertwined. And this whole debate about who gets to participate in this confessionless space speaks to those deeper questions about what it means to be secular, about how much space religion should occupy in a supposedly neutral public sphere.
It's like they're trying to figure out the rules of the game as they go along, constantly adapting to this changing religious landscape. And speaking of changing landscapes, we haven't even touched on how Austria categorizes different religious groups from a legal perspective. It seems like they've got a whole hierarchy in place. But I'm guessing we'll save that juicy bit for later.
You know me too well.
Yeah.
We've definitely got a lot more ground to cover, so stay tuned. We'll be right back after a quick break.
So you're saying they've got different classes of religious groups, like a first class and economy for religions.
It's more complicated than that, but yeah, there's definitely a hierarchy. Think of it like this. You've got the VIPs, and then you've got everyone else.
Okay, I'm all ears. Lay it on me. Who are these VIPs in the world of Austrian religion?
All right, so at the top of the pyramid, you've got the legally recognized churches and religious communities. They've got that gold star, that official seal of approval from the Austrian government.
Fancy. And I'm guessing that comes with some perks. What do they get that those other groups don't?
You better believe it. We're talking about some serious advantages here.
Right.
First off, they get religious education in both public and private schools. That's huge.
Wow, so they get to shape young minds from a very early age. That's a lot of influence. What else is on the menu?
Oh, it gets better. They also get some sweet tax breaks, which is a pretty big deal for any organization, let's be honest. But here's the kicker. They're actually recognized as legal entities under public law.
Okay, you've officially lost me. Public law, what does that even mean in this context?
It means they've got this whole other level of legal clout, a legitimacy that sets them apart from those other religious groups. Think of it like this. They get to play in the big leagues while those other groups are stuck in the minors.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not just about having your beliefs recognized. It's about having real power and influence within the system. No wonder everyone wants a piece of that pie. So who are these lucky winners? Give me some names.
All right, get ready for a mouthful. As of January 1st, 2023, there were 16 recognized churches and religious communities in Austria. Deep breath. The Alvitische Glaubensgemeinschaft, the Old Catholic Church, the Armenian Apostolic Church, the Protestant Church, the Methodist Church, free churches in Austria, the Greek Orthodox Church, the Islamic community, the Jewish community, Jehovah's Witnesses, the Catholic Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Coptic Orthodox Church, the New Apostolic Church, the Buddhist community, and the Syriac Orthodox Church.
Wowza. That's quite a list. They've got pretty much every base covered, from the very old to the relatively new. But what about the second string? Who's hanging out in that state-registered religious confession communities category?
Okay, so as of that same date, you've got the Baha'i Faith, Seventh-day Adventists, the Hindu community, the Sikh community, the Unification Church, the Pentecostal Free Christian communities, the Old Believers, the Church of Scientology, and then three others that also enjoy that legally recognized status.
Interesting. So there's some overlap there. Some groups are playing in both leagues. Now, that's what I call hedging your bets. But it makes you wonder, what's the point of having these two separate categories if there's so much crossover?
That's a great question. And honestly, it's one that scholars and legal experts are still debating. But I think it speaks to the challenges of trying to create a legal framework for something as fluid and dynamic as religion.
Makes sense. Religions are constantly evolving, so trying to pin them down in a legal document is like trying to nail jelly to a wall. But I'm curious about those groups that fall outside of both categories. What happens to them? Do they just get ignored by the legal system altogether?
Not exactly. You see, these other religious communities, the ones that haven't achieved that legally recognized or state-registered status, they often operate under something called the Association Act 2002. It's like a catch-all for all sorts of groups, from sports clubs to book clubs to, you guessed it, religious communities.
So it's a way for them to exist legally, to have some basic rights and protections, even if they don't get all the bells and whistles of those more established groups?
Exactly. And for many of these other groups, it's just a stepping stone. They might be working toward that state-registered status, hoping to climb that legal ladder and gain access to those sweet, sweet privileges.
It's like a game of strategy, figuring out how to navigate this complex system and come out on top. But this whole discussion about legal recognition and privileges begs the question, what about secularism? Where does that fit into all of this?
That's the million-dollar question. And it's one that Austria has been grappling with for decades. You see, the Austrian Constitution doesn't actually come right out and say, we're a secular state. It's a bit more nuanced than that.
Okay, so spill the tea. How secular is Austria, really?
Well, they don't have an official state church, which is a big deal. But here's where it gets interesting. They've got this thing called the Concordat, which is basically a fancy word for a treaty between Austria and the Vatican.
The Vatican, as in the Pope. We're talking about Catholic Central here. What does this Concordat say?
Well, it grants the Catholic Church in Austria some pretty significant privileges, which has led some people to argue that it undermines the whole idea of religious neutrality.
So it's like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Promoting religious freedom on one hand, but giving preferential treatment to one particular religion on the other. That seems a bit counterintuitive, to say the least. Is this Concordat actually part of the Austrian Constitution?
That's the thing. It's not. It's a separate agreement altogether. But even though it's not technically enshrined in the Constitution, its legacy is huge. It's like this shadow hanging over the whole debate about secularism in Austria.
It sounds like they're trying to reconcile the past with the present, those deep-seated religious traditions with the realities of a more modern, diverse society. It's a delicate balancing act, to say the least. But let's get back to the Constitution itself. What does it actually say about religious freedom and non-discrimination?
Okay, so buckle up, because we're about to get into the weeds a bit. The Austrian Federal Constitution doesn't have this nice, neat section that lays out all the rules for religion. Instead, there are these key articles scattered throughout the document that are essential for understanding how they approach these fundamental rights. It's like a scavenger hunt.
Sounds like fun. So where do we start? Give me a landmark.
A great place to start is Article 14 of the State Fundamental Law, or SDGG for short. This is a big one. It guarantees freedom of belief and conscience for everyone. And yes, that explicitly includes atheists.
That's huge. It's like they're saying, we're not going to tell you what to believe, or even if you have to believe in anything at all. That's pretty progressive, especially when you consider how influential religion has been historically in Europe.
It's a cornerstone of their approach to religion, for sure. But then things get a bit more complicated when you look at Article 15.
Oh, here we go. What's the catch? What does Article 15 have up its sleeve?
This is where those special privileges for legally recognized churches and religious communities come into play. Article 15 grants them rights like conducting public religious services, managing their own internal affairs without interference from the state, and protecting their institutions. It's like they've got this extra layer of autonomy and protection that other groups don't.
It's like they're saying, okay, we're down with religious freedom, but only up to a point. So what about everyone else? Do they just have to practice their faith in secret?
Not quite. Article 16 does allow for private religious practice, even for those religions that haven't achieved that legally recognized status. But, and this is a big but, it's got to be within the boundaries of the law. No breaking other laws in the name of religious freedom.
Right, because religious freedom doesn't give you a free pass to do whatever you want. There are limits, as there should be.
Absolutely. And to complicate matters even further, you've got Article 7 of the SDGG, which states that all citizens are equal before the law.
Sounds good so far, right?
Equality for all. It's a beautiful sentiment, but I'm sensing a but coming on.
You know it. The article then goes on to explicitly exclude privileges based on religion. It's like they're saying, everyone's equal, but some are more equal than others, to quote a certain famous pig.
Ouch. So much for equality. It seems like those privileges granted to specific religious groups directly contradict that principle. Talk about mixed messages.
It's a bit of a head-scratcher, that's for sure. And it gets even more convoluted when you factor in those international agreements that Austria has signed. For example, there's the Treaty of Saint-Germain, which dates back to 1919.
1919. Wow, that's a blast from the past. What does a treaty from way back then have to do with religious freedom in Austria today? Well, this treaty includes some important provisions about, you guessed it, religious freedom and non-discrimination. Specifically, Articles 63, 66, and 67 guarantee those rights. And because Austria signed this treaty, those provisions are legally binding. They become part of their legal DNA.
So it's like these international agreements are setting a baseline standard for how Austria has to treat people of different faiths, a kind of minimum requirement when it comes to religious freedom.
Exactly. And it highlights how these issues extend far beyond national borders. We're talking about fundamental human rights here, and those don't just stop at the edge of a map.
It's a good reminder that we're all interconnected, that the choices one country makes can have ripple effects around the world. But we can't forget about that other big international agreement, the European Convention on Human Rights, or EMRK for short.
Ah, yes, the EMRK. That one's a biggie. For our listeners who might not be familiar, the EMRK is like the holy grail of human rights in Europe. It sets out these fundamental rights that everyone within the Council of Europe is entitled to, and that includes, you guessed it, religious freedom.
So how does that play out in practice? What does the EMRK actually say about religion?
Well, Articles 9 and 10 are the key players here. Article 9 protects your right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. It's pretty broad, which is great. And Article 10 protects freedom of expression, which is essential when we're talking about any kind of freedom, really.
Freedom of thought, freedom of conscience, freedom of expression. It sounds pretty comprehensive. Are you about to tell me there's a catch? Because I'm starting to think that with these legal documents, there's always a catch.
You know me too well. And you're right, there's a little something called a reservation of law built into these articles. It basically means that while these rights are guaranteed, each country gets some wiggle room in how they choose to implement them within their own legal systems.
Okay, so it's like a get-out-of-jail-free card. They can say, yeah, we agree with the principle of religious freedom, but we're going to do things our own way.
You got it. It's like a built-in loophole. And it creates this fascinating tension between those universal human rights and the sovereignty of individual nations.
It's like they're trying to find that sweet spot, that balance between upholding those fundamental freedoms and respecting each country's right to chart its own course. It's a tough needle to thread. And to add even more fuel to the fire, there's Article 14 of the EMRK, which prohibits discrimination on any grounds, including, you guessed it, religion or belief.
It's like they're trying to cover all the bases, but in doing so, they've created this incredibly complex and sometimes contradictory legal landscape. It's enough to make your head spin.
No kidding. It's like trying to solve a Rubik's Cube while riding a unicycle on a tightrope. But let's bring this back down to earth for a minute. With this whole tapestry of constitutional provisions and international treaties, what does religious freedom actually look like for someone living in Austria? How do these abstract legal concepts translate into real-world experiences?
That's the question, isn't it? And it's one that I'm sure many Austrians are asking themselves. It's like we've been on this epic journey through the labyrinth of Austrian law, and we finally emerged blinking into the sunlight. But let's be honest, laws are just words on paper, right? It's how those laws are interpreted, debated, and lived out in the real world that really matters.
You hit the nail on the head. It's one thing to change laws, but changing hearts and minds, that's a whole other ballgame. And that's what makes this whole conversation about secularism and religion so fascinating, so complex, and honestly, so messy.
It really is. There are so many different perspectives, so many deeply held beliefs, so many historical grievances. It's not something you can just solve with a quick fix. A magic wand.
No kidding. It's a process, and one that I think will continue to unfold in Austria for many years to come.
So with that in mind, how do you see this whole thing playing out? What factors are going to be most influential in shaping this debate about the role of religion in Austrian society?
Well, one thing that I think is crucial, and this might surprise some people, is the need for greater religious literacy.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Break that down for me. What do you mean by religious literacy?
It's about moving beyond those simplistic, often inaccurate stereotypes about religion. You know, those knee-jerk reactions like all religions are the same or religion is the source of all conflict. It's about recognizing that religion in all its forms is far more nuanced than that.
It's about understanding the history, the diversity, the complexities of different religious traditions, right?
Precisely. And it's not just about memorizing facts and figures. It's about understanding how those beliefs actually translate into real-world practices, how they shape people's values, how they influence their decisions, how they interact with other aspects of their identity.
And how those beliefs have shaped the world we live in today, for better or for worse.
Exactly. And a big part of that is understanding things like religious freedom, what it actually means, how it's enshrined in the law, and how those laws are applied in the real world. It's about recognizing those gray areas, those tricky situations where religious freedom might bump up against other fundamental rights.
It's about having those tough conversations, those sometimes uncomfortable dialogues about where those lines should be drawn.
Absolutely. And that's where education comes in, whether it's through reforming religious education curricula in schools, maybe offering more comparative religion courses that explore different faiths from a neutral academic perspective, or launching public awareness campaigns, or even facilitating those face-to-face dialogues between people of different faiths. Boosting religious literacy can go a long way towards creating a more informed, more tolerant, and ultimately a more peaceful society.
It's about building bridges, right?
Right.
Helping people to see the world through each other's eyes, even if they don't always agree. It's about recognizing our shared humanity, even in the face of difference.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I think Austria's changing demographics are going to play a huge role in all of this as well. We've talked a lot about how the confessionless population is growing rapidly, and as their numbers increase, their voices are going to become louder, they're going to demand a greater say in how these issues are addressed.
That makes sense. As more and more people choose to live without religion, those traditional religious structures are going to have to adapt, right? They can't just keep operating on autopilot, assuming that everyone buys into the old ways of doing things.
Exactly. And this is likely to lead to some really interesting, probably pretty heated, debates about things like the church tax, religious education in schools, and the privileges enjoyed by those legally recognized religious communities.
It's like a tug of war between tradition and change, with those shifting demographics providing the muscle for those who are pushing for a more secular Austria.
Absolutely. And let's not forget about the influence of global trends. Austria might be a small country, but it doesn't exist in a vacuum. The increasing secularization of other European societies, the rise of religious nationalism in some parts of the world, the ongoing debates about religious freedom and pluralism, these are all going to have an impact on how these issues play out in Austria.
It's a complex web of factors, local, national, and international, that are all intertwined, all influencing how this debate unfolds. It's enough to make your head spin.
You got it. It's a dynamic, ever-evolving process, and it's impossible to predict with certainty what the outcome will be. But one thing's for sure, this conversation isn't going away anytime soon.
It's a conversation that's worth having, and one that has implications far beyond the borders of Austria. Thanks for guiding us through this fascinating deep dive into the world of secularism and religion. It's given us a lot to think about.
The pleasure was all mine. These are the kinds of topics that I could discuss for hours.
Me too. But unfortunately, we've reached the end of our show. To our listeners, we want to hear from you. As Austria navigates this complex terrain, how do you think they should balance tradition and change? What role should religion play in a modern, secular society? Leave your comments on our social media pages. We want to hear your thoughts.
Don't be shy. Share your perspectives, engage in respectful dialogue, and let's keep this conversation going.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. I'm Host Name.
And I'm Expert Name.
Signing off. Thanks for listening.